I'm Nellie McCoy. I work for the Mid-City Sentinel. I'm assistant to Danny Marsden, our ace reporter. And you can count on surprises when you travel around with Danny. At that, I wasn't prepared for the surprise I got the other morning when I waltzed into his office and found him making like Laurence Olivier reading Hamlet's soliloquy.
Communism in the Soviet has achieved more in the past 30 years to uplifting and enlightening the common people in the solving of problems of living together than has Christianity or any other body in the past 20 centuries.
Sure, and I'm Daniel Boone. What's gotten into you, Danny? You sound like Comrade Stalin.
Oh, I just wanted to see how silly it sounds when you read it aloud.
Well, you don't expect those dispatches from the Kremlin to make sense, do you?
Well, this little item happens to be from a Canadian newspaper.
Holy smoke, what paper?
The Canadian Tribune, a Toronto paper. It's a communist sheet.
But is that true, what it says about Russia?
If the Russians had all these things they brag about, wouldn't they show them to the rest of the world? Just try to get a visa to go sightseeing in Russia. No, sir. Anybody who falls for that line is light in the head. But it isn't the Russians that bother me so much. It's the communists in Canada.
Oh, the communists in Canada. Poof.
Poof, nothing. There are 23,000 registered members of the Communist Party in Canada. But heaven knows how many fellow travelers.
I didn't know that. But why all the excitement about communists?
Well, because the boss says we have to find out the facts about communism in Canada and write a story about them.
Oh, and just where are we going to find some communists?
I don't know, but I'm going to find out. Have you got it straight, Nellie?
I think so. You're Dave Marshall, and I'm your wife, Natalie. We're both good and mad about the high cost of living, right?
That's right. Now, let me ask the questions, eh? No, here's the house. Mr. Johnson?
Yes.
You're heading a consumer organization to fight higher prices, right?
Yes, I am. Won't you come in and sit down?
No, thanks. My name is Marshall, Dave Marshall. This is my wife, Natalie.
I'm glad to meet you, Mr. Marshall. Mrs. Marshall?
I won't waste your time, Mr. Johnson. My wife and I heard about your organization, and right away we figured, well, somebody trying to do something about the cost of living. So, well, we'd like to join.
Fine, glad to have you. We hold meetings every Tuesday evening. Right now, we're in the process of electing a delegation to travel to Ottawa. We're going to see to it that they do something to protect ordinary working people against profiteering.
I understand you have the support of a number of prominent people.
That's right. Here's our letterhead. You'll notice we have some pretty impressive patrons. Famous author, two college professors, an eminent lawyer, one of the city's most progressive-minded ministers.
Will we meet these people at the meetings?
Well, no. They're pretty busy people, you understand. But they're in complete sympathy with work.
Who runs the organization?
Well, I'm the secretary-treasurer, full-time. Then there's an elected executive, of course. What did you say your occupation is, Mr. Marshall?
He's a reporter.
I'm a court stenographer. I make fairly good money, but oh, it sure melts away fast these days.
I'm sure it does. You must find it pretty hard to stretch the housekeeping money, eh, Mrs. Marshall?
I sure do. And Danny here is such a big eater.
Danny? I thought your husband's name was Dave.
Oh, yes, of course I mean Dave. I call him Danny sometimes. It's sort of a nickname.
Danny seems a queer sort of nickname for Dave, don't you think? Did you say you were a court stenographer, Mr. Marshall?
That's right.
Oh, your wife almost said a moment ago that you were a reporter.
Did she?
You know, you have a remarkable resemblance to a photograph I once saw. A picture of a reporter called Danny Marsden. You know, Mr. Marshall, I rather think you wouldn't be particularly interested in joining this organization. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm rather busy.
I see. Good day, Mr. Gromeski.
Johnson.
It used to be Gromeski, I believe.
If you'll excuse me, I have a great deal of work to do.
I'm sure you have. Goodbye.
Gee, Danny, I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay, kid. I found out what I was after anyway. That character calling himself Johnson was Peter Gromeski when he arrived in Montreal from Odessa in 1935. He's in the files of the RCMP as one of the slipperiest communist operators in the country.
But what about this consumer organization he's running?
Strictly a communist blind.
But what about the important people who support it?
You'll find out, because we're going to call on those people right now. Hey, taxi!
Taxi! Hey, taxi! Blackie, what's them?
Just what I expected. Just what I expected.
Gee, Danny, you're wonderful.
I don't know. Not one of those eminent citizens really knew what this so-called consumers organization was all about. Outfits such as Gromeski's are designed to create trouble and to throw dust, red dust, into the eyes of the credulous. You see, Nellie, you're getting an idea now of how the communists work.
I sure am. That college professor gave us a lot of good stuff about communism in the universities, too. Well, where to now?
Oh, we're here. Yeah, this is the place.
Union headquarters. Yeah, I've heard that labor unions are full of communists.
Well, I'm afraid you're due for a shock. Anyway, let's go in.
Yes? Anything I can do for you?
My name is Marsden. I'm a reporter for the Sentinel. And this is Miss McCoy.
How do you do?
I think you can help us.
Well, I'd be glad to. My name's Graham, by the way. Matt Graham. I'm the union secretary.
Fine. Briefly, I want any facts you can give me about communism and labor unions.
Well, a few communist-dominated unions have given us all a bad name. Commies once ran this union. They got control by trickery.
Is that so? Well, how did they work it?
Well, it started when a young fellow called Staines came to work in one of our plants. He knew a lot about union work and soon held a number of minor posts. Then he was nominated for union secretary. Nobody seems to know just how he got the nomination, except that it was engineered by a group of other young fellows, most of them newcomers, too. I was present at the election meeting. It was the most long-drawn-out affair I ever saw. At 11:15, members were still popping up all over the hall to ask them.
Mr. Chairman, I cannot accept that decision without an appeal to the rules. I believe it's under Rule 18. I believe I have the right to insist that the rules be consulted.
You have the right if you insist. Just a moment.
I wish they'd get on with the election of officers. It's a quarter past 11. I promised my wife I'd be home by 11.
I'm sick of this. Peterson should be reelected anyway. Let's go home.
Okay by me. Let's go.
Well, it went on like that. First one member and then another would leave. I stuck it out. I began to notice that it was always the same people who held things up with their questions. And they were all men who were well known to be friendly with Staines.
A put-up job, eh?
Exactly. Within a year, they had commies holding down every important position. A lot of the former office holders were in disgrace.
In disgrace?
Yes, as a result of whispering campaigns and smear tactics by the Red Element. Then we had a series of disastrous strikes with no reason behind them at all.
Well, why did the workers strike?
The strikes were called by the executive, which, by this time, was communist practically all the way through. Those boys aren't interested in the welfare of the worker. They're only interested in the welfare of the Communist Party. Let me make one thing clear. I'm a union man, always have been and always will be. As far as I'm concerned, the most important things in the world are the rights and the welfare of the working man. But the attitude of the communist, that I can't stomach. They're always preaching that the working man is being exploited. That's ironic. They are the ones who exploit the working man, use him as a tool.
You feel pretty strongly about communists, don't you?
Yes, I do, Marsden. Let me quote to you from a pamphlet I have here. It puts the case against communism in a nutshell.
Now, what pamphlet is that?
It's the policy declarations of the Canadian Chamber of Commerce.
But holy smoke!
I beg your pardon.
Oh, nothing. It was just that I...
Yes?
Well, I hardly expected a labor union official to be quoting from Chamber of Commerce literature. Isn't that like expecting Sir Stafford Cripps to quote Churchill?
All the unions and the Chamber of Commerce have their differences, but we sometimes agree, too.
What was it you were going to read?
Oh, yes, here it is. The Chamber of Commerce, Policy on Communism. The Canadian Chamber of Commerce is convinced that communistic activities in Canada present a definite threat to individual freedom, to democracy, and to the progressive improvement of our standard of living. Evidence is irrefutable that communists hold the belief that loyalty and obedience to the leadership of the communist organization takes precedence over loyalty to Canada, thus destroying the integrity of citizenship. There you have it in a nutshell. On that point, at least, we see absolutely eye to eye with the Chamber of Commerce. Well, Mr. Marsden, you asked me to talk about communists, but I'll bet you didn't expect the kind of harangue I've given you. I'm afraid I get worked up on that particular subject.
Mr. Graham, it's been one of the most enlightening harangues I've ever listened to.
Well, I hope I've been of some help.
You certainly have. Well, we'll get along now. Don't forget to watch for the article in the Sentinel, eh?
I certainly will. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, Miss McCoy.
How's the article coming, Danny?
Oh, pretty well.
You're telling him all about our friend Gromeski and the college professors and the union men?
That and more. I'm telling him not only what communism is, but what it's doing and what we ought to do to combat communism. Here it is, lesson one, Gromeski. Don't join any kind of an organization, no matter how worthwhile its aims seem to be, unless you're sure it's not a communist front organization. Lesson two, the schools. The way to stop young people from falling for the communist line is to give them the facts about our own system. A lot of young men and women have only the haziest notion about free enterprise, what it is and how it works. Lesson three, the unions. You, Nellie, for one, fell into the trap of believing that unions are mostly communist-run. We have to guard against red-baiting, unjustly branding people as communists when they don't deserve it. Honest unions won't stand for communism in the ranks. No, I need an ending.
How about this?
Now, what is it?
Oh, just something I ran across. It's out of a speech by somebody.
Hey, Nellie, this is wonderful stuff. Let's see. If our hearts and our minds are empty...
If we lack the moral and spiritual principles which determine our relationship with God and our fellow man, then communism presents a real and a constant danger. It offers an ideal, a name, a philosophy, evil and insidious though it be, which may perhaps take the place of a real guiding principle. A person who has lost his belief in God, his faith in his country, and his love for his fellow man is drifting aimlessly in a cold, dark, and frightening void. And the will-o'-the-wisp of communism can appear powerfully attractive. But if Canadians are armed with knowledge and religious faith, then we need have no fear for the future.